are back. You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington. Joining me today, it's Mr. Mike Giletto. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, thank you. Glad to be back.
Good. And in addition to you, we also have Mike Giletto Jr. How you doing, buddy?
I'm making my return.
You know, producer Mike is back on a full show. If you listen to the end of last week's show, you know that I'm hurting a little bit. It's allergy season for me. And, you know, Mike Jr. just graciously agreed to come on and kind of lighten the load for me. You know, I'll let the two Italian guys get talking and it'll go from there. It'll spiral out of control. I won't have to say a word. Everything's great.
Yeah, you were a game time decision here.
I was a game time decision. You were a little worried that you'd have to be a host, and you know, you haven't sat in the A chair here in a very long time.
No, it's been a while.
Basically, the interview with Big Brother alum Nick Macarone, is that the last time that you hosted a show?
That's probably the last time, yeah.
Probably. We got to get him back on the show, by the way.
Yeah, we do. I'll have to talk to him. I'm sure he'd be willing to come on.
Anyway, before we get too deep into this, you can find the show on Twitter at YWT Podcast. You can find Mike at Mike_Giletto. And Mike Sr. at, what, Mike from S Jersey, I believe.
Yep, it's one of the best ideas I've ever had, was getting him on Twitter.
Oh, it's brilliant. You can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcast, sportstalkphilly.com, pretty much everywhere else. We're also on Spotify. I don't think I mention that every week, but we are. So let's get into it. Flyers kind of had another Flyers week. You know, 1-1-1. Win, loss, overtime loss. It was actually a shootout Saturday to Calgary. We'll talk a little bit about Calgary as we get into it. But overall, Senior, how did you think the week went?
Uneventful, I would say. If not for the Carolina game, it would have been another miserable week. And they were not all that good in the Carolina game and were down 2-0 early. And it looked like that was going to be another, you know, roller coaster down game that, again, the team just wins three, lose three, win three, lose three. It's just, you know, it's just a nightmare.
Yeah, definitely. And talking about the week as it went, it was pretty uneventful. You're right. And you talked about not really outplaying Carolina, but kind of getting some good bounces and winning. I would say the opposite happened in the Calgary game. I think the Flyers outplayed Calgary for 70% of that game.
Yeah, that's why I think it's still a down week, even though, because the game they won, they didn't really play well. Then they play really well and lose a game that you just have to win. I mean, Calgary at home, you're winning in the third period. You have to win that game.
Yeah, and Calgary had some travel issues leaving St. Louis Saturday or Thursday night. They actually ended up staying in St. Louis overnight and not flying into Philly until Friday.
And they've been bad.
Yeah, so they were kind of out of that routine. And, you know, there's a lot of questions surrounding that team. Johnny Gaudreau, you know, should apparently be on the trade block, according to The Athletic. And, you know, it's a team in turmoil. And somebody wrote an article about, you know, it's more than just firing the coach. There was some speculation that Calgary needs to make some big sweeping changes.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's the thing where, like, is it time for them to really trade Johnny Hockey? Like, logistically, it doesn't make sense. Especially because, like, on the Twitterverse, right, everybody's saying, oh, give him Jake. It's like, why, if they're going to trade Johnny Hockey, what on earth would they want Jake Voracek for?
Well, you assume that they still want to, you know, try to be competitive, and they're not going to trade Johnny Gaudreau and, you know, blow it up, because they are a good, young, talented team.
Getting a piece, like, Voracek's definitely helping us, you know, be competitive. So,
well, listen, he's say what you want about him, but he is an 80-point guy, 75, 80 points pretty much every year.
He was that guy when he was playing bad. Now he's playing awful, and he's not even close to that guy. He's got, what, 15 points in 25 games?
We'll see. But at the same time, realistically, let's say the Flyers are going to trade for Johnny Gaudreau. They're not, by the way. But realistically, say that they are. Johnny Gaudreau is making $6.75 million this year and then for the next 2 years. You have to move money to get Johnny Gaudreau on your team. And realistically, there's not a ton of Flyers making enough money for them to dump. It's basically Jake, Claude, and Kevin Hayes has a no move. And right, James Van Riemsdyk, who also has a no move.
Why would Calgary want to add Voracek's money?
Well, the thing is, if they want to trade Johnny Gaudreau, they kind of have to take on a salary back if you're talking about the Flyers. So Jake isn't there for value. Jake would be there just to make the money work.
Okay, if they got enough with Jake to offset the money law. I got you.
I was going to say, you would then have to pay for the value of Johnny Gaudreau, which you're not doing with Jake, but you would do with, I saw somebody say Morgan Frost. That might be enough to get it done on its own. I don't think I'd be particularly comfortable with it, but that's kind of the speculation, as Mike said on the Twitterverse, is would you trade Jake Voracek and Morgan Frost for a guy like Johnny Gaudreau? And would the Flames accept that?
I wouldn't do it.
I still don't know if that's enough.
Really?
Like, I don't know if I'd do that, but I still don't know if Calgary would.
Right, and that's a totally valid answer, saying I wouldn't do that. That's too much for me to pay, but it's also not enough for Calgary to accept. That's a totally valid answer, and I think that's the case here.
If Gaudreau was 6 foot, 205 pounds, I would do it. But every guy we bring up, Farabee, Frost, Konechny, every guy we bring up that has some type of offensive talent and can skate is 5 foot nothing, 150-something pounds. Well, and that's what Gaudreau is.
That's how the NHL is today.
Not for the teams that are winning.
I mean, like,
Shifley's not. Wheeler's not. Pasternak's not. Bergeron's not. These guys can skate, and they're big.
By the way, Joel Farabee is 6 foot tall. I mean, he's only a buck 63.
On skates. There's no way he's 6 foot.
According to his Elite Prospects page, he is 6 foot tall, 163 pounds. Now, if you're 6 foot tall, 163 pounds is a little on the skinny side, but he's young enough that he can still add a little bit of muscle and bulk up a little bit.
The 163 tells me he's really 5 foot eight.
Yeah, no, he's 6 foot tall.
Well, you also named a bunch of the guys that are like the upper tier, the upper echelon of players. And I don't know if Morgan Frost is that guy either.
I think he's going to be because we need to talk about that, by the way. Morgan Frost made his NHL debut this week, scored a goal, then played a second NHL game, and scored another goal. Both absolute beauties, by the way. So since we're into Morgan Frost, why don't we talk about him also, in addition to what he would potentially bring to a Johnny Gaudreau trade?
Oh, he looks incredible.
He does.
Man, he just does. I mean, there was one blunder in... Was that the Calgary game.
It was awful. The
turnover in the middle of the ice that led directly to a goal, and then for some
Calgary's
reason...
Calgary's first goal, yeah.
And then for some reason jumps out of the way of the shot, trying to avoid it. But yeah, other than that, he's looked terrific.
Yeah, absolutely. And both goals, it's going to sound silly, both goals were vintage Danny Briere goals, which is weird for number 48 in a Flyers uniform size.
We have a clone of Danny Briere. It's that simple.
I can't picture Danny jumping out of the way of a puck, though.
No. That's
being shot at his goalie.
But you can see him taking that faceoff from Claude and just roofing it, or backhanding it from... a foot outside the blue paint.
And then finishes it with the classic Danny B. Selle. The pump fist celebration was great.
Especially if it's a playoff game.
Yeah, and if you want to talk... Yeah, and if he puts up 30 points during a playoff run, he can do no wrong for the rest of time, in my book.
No, to win that playoff run, you still have to block the puck that's being shot.
I understand that, but you know, you want to talk about smaller players. Danny B. was a smaller player, and he was successful in this league back when you could... hook and clutch and grab a little more.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying you can't have a player or two like that. You can't have five. Five of them. Because you can't. Because the game is not all played in the middle of the ice. The game is played 80%. Oh, I'm probably overstating that a little bit. The game is played predominantly on the wall. If you can't play on the wall, you're going to lose puck possession all the time.
I do agree that the playoff hockey is just different than regular season hockey.
I understand
at the teams like the Calgary Flames, who are a little speedy, crushed it last year, knocked out in the first round. You look at Tampa, who's not exactly biggest. They got speed. They got knocked out in the first round. Winnipeg's always deep every year. Trying to think of the other team. Boston's in it every year. I mean,
Winnipeg, who is large, they made a finals run or semifinal run.
Right. So
it's a different brand
of hockey. It's the reason
forwards. I'm sorry.
It's the reason why why they got bullied by Washington twice out of 3 years. Or was it twice? No, the second year was Pittsburgh. But either way,
correct.
It's why they got bullied by Washington 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, they're small and they get bullied off the puck in the playoffs. It's a different brand of hockey.
I understand
I just can't wait till they bring somebody up that's got, you know, the hands and it's got the speed and he's got the offensive moves. Wow, this guy looks really good. And he's 6 foot, 205 pounds. Can't wait.
But how many players exist in the league like that?
50, and we don't have one.
I don't know about 50.
Sure, you're there are.
No, it's not 50.
No, it's not 50.
Winnipeg has five by themselves.
I think you're overstating how big guys like Kyle Connors and Nikolai Ehlers are. They're not huge guys.
I'm counting Scheifele. I'm counting Wheeler. I'm counting Laine. That's just three off the top of my head.
And Laine doesn't play defense. He's not where they are because
that's
of
not
him.
My point. The guy plays the game with the size and speed. Barkov. Guy can fly.
Oh,
he's,
sure.
He's gigantic.
He's a top five center in the league.
I understand
that's
that.
That's not what Morgan Frost is.
I understand that, but that's what you need. You got to figure out a way to get it, draft it. So
you don't
scout
think Sean Couturier is that?
No.
No, yeah, I wouldn't.
These guys are so small. I've actually started to look at Couturier and go, wow, the guy's getting a little bigger. No, he's not. Everybody around him
is
getting
Couturier
smaller.
Sean Couturier is 6 foot five.
No, he's not.
He's
Sean Couturier
tall.
Is
he's
six
tall.
Foot five. I stood next to him at the carnival.
He's a twig. But he's
really thin and he hasn't put on any size at all of muscle. But again, the guys that they're putting next to him, these Flyers have gotten so small. Again, I've started to look at Couturier and go, is he putting on some muscle? But no, he's not. He's the same size. The other guys are smaller.
Sean Couturier is listed as 6'4", 212.
Okay, so he's 6'2".
Fine, he's still 212. That's exactly what you were asking for 15 seconds ago. He scores goals. He plays defense. He's good. He's got good hands. He wins faceoffs.
Does he look like he muscles people out there?
No.
I think on occasion he does.
No, he's a very good player. I like him. I want him on our team, all that stuff. But he's not the guy that I'm talking about. He's not, you know, that Barkov. Even Crosby fits the bill.
Sure.
You know,
but then
I'm not saying we should get Crosby. I'm not saying that. No. What I mean is, I know we're not going to.
No.
But we need size to go along with speed. Right.
Yeah, I mean, Crosby's pretty much just the best grinder of all time. That's all he is. He's just the grinder with the greatest hands ever.
I mean, I was going to say, I wouldn't say that's all he is, but I get what you're saying.
Right.
He's a little more than just the greatest grinder to play the game.
Yeah, but you get what I'm saying there.
What his game has morphed into from his first 2 or 3 years in the league to where he is now, it's been something to watch. I hate him, and again, I hope he retires tomorrow, whether be forced or otherwise. Again, the guy's real. You got to respect them, and that's all I'm going to say about him because I hate him.
Let me read off the stats of a player. Okay, 6 foot two, 214 pounds, strong on the puck, really good on the wall. 66 points last year, 85 the year before that. What do you think of that player?
I would have to see the eye test. If that guy gives the puck away 5 times a game and is a -3 for the season, those 85 points were worthless. I'm just going to guess. Who are you talking
it's
about?
Kopitar is my guess.
No, you're right. It's Jake Voracek.
Yeah, oh, cool. Exactly. Oh, okay, exactly. Okay, okay. Again, he's strong on the wall. He's fast. He does everything, but he's dumb as dirt.
That's funny.
No, I know he's your favorite player, so I try to bring him up at least once per show.
It's tradition at this point.
Right, but there's a small handful of perfect players in the NHL. A small handful.
For
Sidney
sure.
Sidney Crosby's one of them. We just talked about it. I would put Nathan MacKinnon as another. Connor McDavid is very, very good, the best player in the world, but he's not perfect in your eyes because he is small. He's not great on the wall.
He doesn't really need to be because of how
I understand.
Fast he is.
I understand. But at the same time, you know, I'm naming these guys, Sean Couturier, Jake Voracek, who have 4 out of 5 things, or, you know, 6 out of 8 things, something in that nature. And it's, you know, in your eyes, senior, it's not good enough.
No, when you watch the game, you can see it's not good enough.
Right. And the problem is, okay, first of all, I never see Sean Couturier play hockey and say it's not good enough. Second of all, it's very difficult to have a player who doesn't have something wrong. And if you think, I don't think St. Louis has a single one of those players.
As a single, what? The guy that just does everything?
The guy who does everything. The guy who's
Ryan O'Reilly was incredible.
Ryan O'Reilly's pretty close. That's fair. He was incredible. I forgot about Ryan O'Reilly because he does it all silently. It's incredible.
Right. He's terrific. And then on the back end, they have their number one defenseman in Alex Pietrangelo.
I understand. But
and then they call Lightning a bottle with Binnington. So that helps.
But we're talking about, you know, moving forward, long-term success, correct?
Sure.
And, you know, Ryan O'Reilly is going to be great every year. Alex Pietrangelo's getting old, probably starting to slide downhill, and I don't know if Colton Parayko can step up and be the number one when Pietrangelo kind of falls off that cliff.
Pietrangelo's only 28, 29 years old, isn't he?
Is he really?
I think he's older than that. But he's not 36 either.
No, he's not 36, but at the same time, he's not getting any better at hockey, right? He's as good as he's going to be.
Yeah, no, this is who he is, yeah. And which is good. He's very good.
Yeah, and he's in his prime, but he's probably on the back end of his prime.
Agreed.
And
in January, he will turn 30, so he's 29 currently.
We had this conversation last week, so he's 29.
Yeah. Yes.
Can tell you listen to the product, Mike.
Do you like Draisaitl?
I do enjoy Leon Draisaitl, yeah.
6'2", 210.
Yep. Okay. So he's a little bit, he's about the same size as Jake Voracek. Okay.
And Sean Couturier, which we literally just said.
And Sean Couturier.
And when Couturier is their second best center, we got something.
Well, that's easy to say. Behind Connor McDavid.
I'm just saying, he's their second best center.
Draisaitl doesn't even play center. No, he's not. He's their best winger. Let's get real.
I think he plays more center than McDavid. Let's be real. There's a hot take for you.
Either way, okay, then I would argue that they don't have a best center, that they just have really good hockey players, and it doesn't matter what position.
Well, no, they don't have really good hockey. They have two really good hockey players and a bunch of scrubs.
Okay, so they have really good hockey players.
And they have James Neal, who forgot how to play hockey last year. How many goals does he have now? Is he up to 15 yet? It's probably close.
I think it was 13.
Yeah.
I think it's 13. Okay. He didn't score last night.
Well, he had 8 in the first, five games?
Something like that. James Neal, yeah. But he's about as valuable as Milan Lucic.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting one. When we talked about Johnny Hockey, I'd heard people saying, you know, if we take the Lucic contract along with Johnny Hockey, obviously we have to send some more cap.
Right.
We have to
send Jake plus something because Lucic is making, $5 million?
Something like that.
The Flyers have, less than $1 million in cap space.
Yeah.
You're not taking Johnny Gaudreau's 6.8 and Milan Lucic's 5 plus. I think it might be more than that. What else do you have to move? I don't understand how the money would work there.
Yeah, I don't know.
And even if they retain, they're not going to want to retain for three more years or whatever Lucic has left on his deal. So, long story short, circling back around 15 minutes later, the Flyers aren't trading for Johnny Gaudreau.
Makes no sense.
No sense. I didn't mean to go back there. So,
out of curiosity, do you like Evgeny Kuznetsov? Do you think he can play?
I do like Evgeny Kuznetsov.
Okay, 6'2", 208.
I also don't know if I put Kuznetsov as a first line center.
No, I'm just saying there are more guys in the league that are 6 foot plus, 200 plus than you guys think there are.
Okay.
But it's how you use it.
Okay, but who would you rather have, Sean Couturier or Evgeny Kuznetsov?
I'd rather have Kuznetsov.
I think it's close.
I'm taking Couturier all day long.
I think it's close.
Who was the better player the last time we played Washington? Couturier or Kuznetsov?
Kuznetsov. Clearly. Kuznetsov was all over the place.
Yeah.
Sure. But, I mean, if you think about it, he might have a little bit of extra motivation behind his pregame routine.
Why?
He's bumping lines in the locker room.
Wow. Look, whatever it takes. And look, you wear Flyers blinders, so you like Couturier better than Kuznetsov.
No, I acknowledge Kuznetsov that I do, but I also think Couturier, I don't agree with that.
I think
Couturier
close.
Plays more of a 200-foot game. Kuznetsov might be a little more skilled offensively. I will entirely grant that. But I think it's close. And then I think defensively, Sean Couturier is a top five center in the league. Defensively, put it in context.
Defensively top five, yes.
So if he's 95% as good as Kuznetsov offensively, which I think he is.
No, he's not. But that's okay.
And 140% better than him defensively, then I'll take that player every day of the week.
Okay. I just disagree.
Okay, of course you do. I said something on this podcast. You disagree. That's how this works.
I want the Flyers to be a better team. I want them to play better and win more games and compete for the Stanley Cup.
Also, can I rant about something real quick? About Sean Couturier?
Here we go.
Say what you want about the shootout. It's dreadful. I'm tired of seeing Sean Couturier in the shootout. I'm tired of it.
Okay.
He doesn't do anything. He goes down and just takes a low percentage shot from the top of the circle. That's it. But that's most of the guys on this team, though. Nobody gets the goalie moving side to side. But I'm tired of Sean Couturier in the shootout.
It's like the AI in NHL 20. They skate in, they take a shot from the hash marks. Right. That's it.
Yep, that's it.
The late third period overtime and shootout yesterday, it felt, if I didn't know any better, you would look at the bench and Hakstol was on the bench. And I'm not really blasting Vigneault for that. It's not a shot at him. It's more a shot at the players.
We mentioned Dave Hakstol. Take a shot.
Because they, with a minute and a half left, you just felt it coming. They're sitting back.
With about 6 minutes left, the team turtled.
They turtled. No, but when they pulled the goalie, they literally, okay, we're killing a penalty. And then they'll just stand there with their sticks, you know, out trying to block pit. No attack of the puck whatsoever. And I know that's not Vigneault.
That hasn't been their style at all.
Right.
Right. And it's ironic that you say it's like they were killing a penalty, because the penalty kill has been really good this season. It was good in that game yesterday, too.
They just fell right back into their old habit. And then the shootout, it looked like they didn't practice it again. The Flyers were actually doing pretty well, almost maybe 50-50 in the shootout before the last two or three shootouts.
Something like that, yeah.
And they, you know, you can actually see them doing things. Okay, they must be working on this in practice. Then you watch Giroux take a slap shot yesterday, and you watch...
Takes a slap shot from the crease.
It's insane. Yeah.
I think he's got to get rid of that. I think scoring on that slapper might have been the worst thing to happen to Claude, because now he's going after it. The next day, they played Boston, and he faked the clapper in the shootout and went with a wrist shot. Yesterday, he was looking. It looked like he was going to fake it again, and then he thought he saw a hole and, you know, tried to rip it, and Rittich made the save. He's got to get rid of that slapper.
Yeah,
it's only effective if it's coming out of nowhere, and if anybody's looking for it, it's useless.
Who shot first, Farabee?
It was Farabee. He tried the same exact move
that he scored on. Yep. Same exact. The goalie knows it's coming.
Yep.
Okay. Then Giroux takes a slap shot, and then Couturier touches the puck. As soon as he touches it, Mike says, they're watching the game together, and he says, "Oh, here comes a wristed to the low side on the blocker side." Boom. That's exactly what he did, guys.
What'd you say?
Thanks for that invite, guys. I didn't do anything yesterday.
Yeah, and he usually he did trick me out. He usually goes low blocker. He went low glove that time, but he still went low shot on the net.
No movement side to side whatsoever from any of the three players. And I'm like, okay, I thought Vigneault was making them work on this in practice, and either again, they're not taking it into the game, or Vigneault isn't making them practice it.
Yeah. And then the one goal that was scored by Calgary, the guy made a move. Got the legs open, slid it under the leg. You got to get the goalie moving. It's hockey 101.
When you move the puck to one side, the goalie either is going to give you the net and let you score, or he has to move with you.
Yeah.
When you move, your feet open.
Yeah, and for the record, Carter Hart did play great yesterday. That loss isn't on him.
Yeah.
The Flyer decided
to jump out of the way. So.
And then got deflected by another Flyer on its way there.
It bounced off a leg. Yeah. I don't know if you saw that.
I think it hit Myers, I think.
It was one of the defense.
One of the defense. Yeah. Maybe Sanheim.
Absolutely nothing Hart can do about that one.
No, not at all.
Once it gets to a shootout, man, it's kind of hard to win if your team doesn't score. Yeah. So, you know, that's that. And that kind of wraps up the week. I do actually want to go around the NHL a little bit.
Before you do that, because we just talked about the defenseman a little bit. Do you want to jump into Shane Gostisbehere getting scratched on Saturday?
That's a good call. Saturday's game against Calgary, Shane Gostisbehere was scratched kind of last minute. I don't know when Shane knew about the decision, but it wasn't made public until right before, you know, really right before puck drop. Basically,
during the line rushes, everybody kind of got the sense of what was going on.
Right. So Shane Gostisbehere sat in the press box as a healthy scratch for the first time in a very long time. I remember Hakstol did it 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago.
I think it was sophomore year, I believe.
Yeah, sat him for a couple of games to try to get his legs going.
He was struggling at that point that they did that. More so even than he was right now.
Right, and he's been struggling now. I think he's got 1 point in his last six games, and you know, he's kind of just playing poorly, made some pretty bad turnovers. And if Ghost isn't contributing offensively, he's kind of useless. He's an okay defenseman, but he's not stellar in any capacity on the defensive side of the puck.
No, not at all.
I think if he's not helping your offense, he's kind of useless.
Oh, absolutely. He's falling into that Voracek form a little bit. Not what I mean by that is time, how much time he's playing. He's not going to be able to put up the offensive numbers that he was if he's playing the limited number of minutes. So on the third defense pair, it's just going to limit his offensive ability.
And he's not getting any power play time anymore.
Right.
At least not power play one.
Provorov has taken his spot on power play one.
And justifiably so.
Absolutely. And in an NHL today where your top power play unit is often playing a minute 10, a minute 20, sometimes a minute 30, second power play unit very rarely has time to set up and have a chance to look good. So he's not really getting much power play time. And then when he is, it's on the second unit, often changing on the fly in a little bit of a scramble. And then he's with second unit players who, you know, still very good.
I think Vigneault was just tired of seeing him pushed around in the defensive end. And it circles back to my "we're too small" argument, but he is. He's just too small to play defense. He really is. In the NHL, on the wall, he's going to be a liability.
So what you're saying is they should put him on forward. Put him on
No, we don't need another Smurf.
I've considered that. Another Smurf. I think I've said it to you, Mike. I don't know if I would hate Shane Gostisbehere as like a Tyler Pitlick type player. Kind of a fourth line. You know, he's got a little bit of speed down there, but he can still be responsible defensively. I don't think I would hate it. And with Robert Hägg coming up and looking solid in yesterday's game by most accounts, you know, your top six has some talent. You know, you got Phil Myers, you got Matt Niskanen has been stellar this year. Ivan Provorov has been the Flyers' best defenseman.
Ivan Provorov, you can argue, has been the best Flyer. Okay, Konechny and the other Smurfs aside, and I love Konechny's having a good year. Nobody, I don't think anybody, has benefited more from Vigneault than Provorov.
I agree.
He has been fantastic.
He looks so confident.
Yep.
He has no problem getting that pass at the point, skating it in and taking a shot and just ripping it bar down. He's done it a couple times.
And there's a lot of little things subtly in the defensive zone that he now does. And I really believe a lot of that, whether it's Vigneault or the other defensive coaches, that are helping him positionally maintain what he needs to maintain to limit, seriously limit the turnovers. He just looks so much more confident.
He really does. Yeah, and the system looks like it's benefiting Provorov in a way that maybe it's not benefiting Gostisbehere.
Well, Provorov just has the physical tools to do the things that you need to do to protect the puck in the defensive zone.
Right.
One of the goals I gave up yesterday, or maybe it was the Carolina, one of the first two Carolina goal games, the defenseman, I think it was Sanheim, was just in such a rush to throw the puck up the wall. It ends up on the defenseman's stick, shot, deflected in. If the puck is at the defenseman's feet, it can't go in the net. Relax. You don't have to just throw the puck away. It's better that they take it from you than you throw it away.
Yep.
So that slowly but surely, it has taken hold with Provorov. And slowly but surely, hopefully, it will do the rest with Myers and Sanheim and everyone else.
Yeah, Provorov looks really good. And I was his biggest critic the last 2 years because he hasn't
justifiably
played well.
So. Yeah, no, he hadn't progressed.
So it looks like he's finally taking a step forward.
Yeah, he had that stellar rookie season, and everybody's expectations shot way up.
Was it stellar though? Like, it was very good for a 19-year-old defenseman, or however old he was. Very good, but I don't know if I'd use the word stellar.
It gave every reason to be absolutely optimistic.
For sure. Yeah,
I think it was okay. So I want to compare Ghost's rookie season to Provorov's rookie season. Ghost's rookie season was a little bit shorter. He was a mid-season call-up when Mark Streit got hurt, and he just started scoring goals. He scored power play goals in like overtime goals in like four of his first 10 games. He was scoring power play goals all over the place. And
if the word is impact, Ghost had more impact.
Exactly. Expectations shot to the moon because you have this young defenseman who just came out of college. He's ready and raring to go, and boom, he's scoring goals at an NHL level right away.
And real talk, they don't make the playoffs without Shane Gostisbehere.
Absolutely not.
They don't.
He carried them to that Washington series for sure. So then next year, Provorov comes in, and His rookie season, I would put it on par in terms of how just how good he was. He just wasn't quite as offensively impactful, which is not his game, and that's fine. But yes, I would absolutely say that it was stellar. I have no problem saying that.
You're looking through those Flyers, blinders again. But yeah, but no, he was good. He was, again, 19 years old, rookie, you know, doesn't speak the language. Had a very good rookie year.
He spoke pretty well.
Did he? He's lived in North America.
Okay.
Yeah, he's lived in North America for most of his life, I believe.
He's Russian by birth, but they came over like when he was in middle school, and they moved to Pennsylvania when he was like 12.
No, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, that's why his English is so good.
Okay.
But I'm just going back to the high expectation thing. Maybe that's why we were so harsh on him in years 2 and 3, because the expectation was so high. Because
that's exactly where I was going.
And that could be something with Shane Gostisbehere. Like, I wonder if this is something to it, too. Ever since the trade rumor started the swirl, maybe he's gripping the stick a little tighter.
Absolutely.
And things like that. Maybe he's trying to force a little bit. But
I'm absolutely willing to say that. And I'm not on the, we have to trade Ghost, he sucks, plan. But I really legitimately think at this point in his career, a change of scenery would do wonders for him.
I don't think anything changes who he is. He is who he is. If you can get anything for him, you absolutely do it.
I don't know how much you can get for him at this point.
You'll be able to get something. Somebody's going to be looking for that puck-moving offensive defenseman. They just will.
Right. No, I'm not sitting here saying you have to trade him because I don't like Shane Gostisbehere or because I don't want him on my hockey team. I do. I kind of want him to figure it out.
What's to figure out, though? What's going to change the fact that he's 5'10", 160 pounds? What's going
to
change that?
You don't need him to be big, though. You need him to be the dynamic guy that he was his rookie year, and he just hasn't shown that. It's not that he's trying those and just failing or whatever, and you know, maybe he gets 50% of them or whatnot, but he's just not even trying them. It's like his confidence is just shattered. He's not even trying to be the dynamic guy he was his rookie year.
So you keep talking about size. Let me ask you something. How much time do you spend on the wall during the power play?
He's not playing the power play.
How much time do you spend on the wall during the power play?
That's not why he isn't playing, though.
Can you please answer the question?
On the wall, zero. Neck wall, okay, how much 10%.
How much time do you spend on the wall in 3-on-3 overtime?
None.
Okay. That is what Shane Gostisbehere wants to be doing as an NHL player.
I understand, but you can't have somebody on your roster taking a top 6 defense spot because he's great in 3-on-3. You only play 3-on-3.
Not 3-on-3, but he's there to score goals and put the puck in the net.
You don't need him to be great. You need him to play the third line or play the third pair. Play 12 to 14 solid, fine minutes of hockey a night.
And he's not doing that.
Which he's capable of doing.
No, he's not.
We've seen him do it.
I didn't say he's doing it. I said he's capable of doing it.
Based on what?
We've seen him do it. We saw it his whole rookie year. We've seen it in flashes for the last couple years. He is capable of being a solid, acceptable fifth or sixth defenseman on a hockey team.
But you saw it in years where he was playing with a very good defenseman next to him.
When has his defense corps ever been good?
Andrew McDonald did absolute wonders for his career. That's his rookie year partner.
No, I'm not saying the guy on the other side was great, but he was playing top second pair minutes and time where the guy on the other side was better than Braun.
Andrew McDonald is the worst.
Anybody's better than Braun. I'm better than Braun.
Andrew McDonald is not better than Braun.
Braun's awful.
Okay.
Okay. Out of everything that's been said on the show, that might be the hottest take of them all.
No, but Braun's pretty bad.
He's bad. But to say he's better than Andrew McDonald, I don't know.
I hated the M&M boys, so that's I'm not going to sing the virtues of McDonald. That's for sure.
Well, him and Manning.
No, the M&M brothers. Thank God they're out of here.
Senior, give me a second here. Let me finish this one little thought here, and then I'll let you go.
Go ahead.
I agree. Shane Gostisbehere playing top pair minutes with Justin Braun is a bad idea. I think in a matchup situation against the other team's bottom six, Shane Gostisbehere and Justin Braun as a pairing even can play 12-ish minutes a night and do fine. They don't need to completely stop the team. They just need to be fine. They don't need to be insane. They just need to be fine.
But they haven't been
fine. Let me finish. So they spend this 12 minutes a night being fine. And when Shane Gostisbehere gets his offense figured out, when he gets his legs going, when he relaxes, when he, whatever he needs to do to solve his problems, he can play 12 minutes a night and then power play time. And then if you get to overtime, overtime. And if he's ready to go, that's where I want him to be. I don't need him to be a top pairing Norris candidate like, you know, like we all thought he was going to be after his rookie year. And I think he finished fifth in Norris voting his third year. He made a run at some point. Anyway.
Yeah, because it's kind of been a pattern with him where rookie year was great. Sophomore year wasn't. Then the right. year after that, he was very, very, very good. Then the year after that, he was bad. So that's why everybody right. expected him to get to be good this year, because it's kind of followed his pattern of his career.
Sure, but I think at this point the ship has sailed on Shane Gostisbehere playing 26 minutes a night.
For sure.
And being a top pair defenseman and a Norris Trophy candidate and the number one defenseman, blah, blah. He's not Erik Karlsson. He's just not.
Erik Karlsson isn't even Erik Karlsson anymore.
Okay, fine. Then he's not whoever. Insert
Cal McCarr.
Insert offensive defenseman here. He's John not Cal McCarr.
John
he's
Karlsson, not, who's on pace to have over 100 points. The first defenseman to do it since like 91.
Your question was if he can give you those things. And that's all great, but he's not. If he was, he would be playing. He wouldn't have been a healthy scratch. He's not doing those things. Clearly, Vigneault was tired of seeing him get muscled out of, you know, and out of position and not being able to, you know, to hold the fort, and he's tired of seeing it.
I think it's a confidence issue. I really do.
No amount of confidence in the world is going to make him a bigger, stronger player and be able to defend.
But you don't
better.
Need him to be that player. But the reason
why isn't he playing? Then why'd they scratch him if you don't need him to be that player?
Because you need him to be offensive and carry the puck and drive your power play.
Vigneault and he hasn't
wasn't
done
doing
that
those
yet.
Things. And those Vigneault are confidence things.
I don't agree with that. Vigneault is demanding other things from him. And he can't deliver those things.
Okay, fine. And a diminished role is great. I think it's good for Shane Gostisbehere. That's what I'm asking for. A diminished role.
Oh, he's got a diminished role. It's in the press box.
I think he'll be back in the lineup Monday night against Vancouver.
We'll see.
The reason I'd be open to trading him is because you said it earlier, Kyle. If he's not the dynamic guy on the power play, and he's not the offensive threat we all think he can be, he's pretty much useless. So I'd rather get somebody in here like a Hag, and I'm not even a big Hag fan, but if somebody that can keep the puck out of the net, I'd rather that than the Shane Gostisbehere. So see what you can get for him, but you know, I'm not going to give him away. So I don't know what his trade value is.
Yeah, and I also think you're selling very, very low on him at this point.
Absolutely.
And I think it makes more sense at this point. If you want to get rid of him, if AV doesn't want him on the roster, I think at this point it makes way more sense to try to rehab him this season, get him to turn it around, get a little confidence back in the stick, get him going, get him scoring some goals, and then at the end of the season or at the draft, you look at options.
As long as this team is 4 or 5 games over 500, I don't think you'll see that happen because they're going to play the games to win. What you need to do to rehabilitate him and his trade value, you have to play him 20 minutes a night
and live
with the downside to get the upside.
And I don't think that's
again,
the case.
Just like Voracek's offense is on the downside because he isn't taking as many risks and he isn't doing as many crazy things and trying to cut through this guy and cut through that guy and pass through this guy. His numbers are down because he's not doing those things. But also are the number of chances he's not giving up. They're down. Not enough, but they're down. And that's what's going on with Ghost. Because he's not doing the dynamic things, he's not risking as much and he's not giving up as many defensive chances against, but he's also not creating the offense.
Okay, but would you be willing to admit that there's a chance he's not doing quite as much offensively because he's not taking risks, because he doesn't have that confidence that he had? He definitely had that confidence his rookie year because he was walking in and just taking, you know, bar down clappers and just nailing them all. And as time has gone on, whenever he hits a slump, his shot suffers, his ability to carry the puck suffers, his ability to hold the puck in at the blue line suffers. And if you remember his rookie year, that's the one
fantastic
thing that everyone noticed.
Yeah.
He kept everything in the zone.
Well, he took risks because they weren't going to win without those risks. Okay, he did things that I believe he was being told to do, because if that was their only way to win.
There's no way he was told to be that creative. Not with Dave Hextall.
No.
Not with Dave Hextall.
It certainly wasn't tampered down.
But how many times have we seen this year, and even going back to maybe half of last year, the patented spin move that he used to do all the time his rookie year? You just don't see it anymore. You don't see the fake shot go around somebody. He just doesn't look like the creative guy he was.
Again, I think part of that is because he's being taught to try to limit the defensive liability. And I think there's a confidence thing involved in that and not taking certain risks. Because when you're asked to play on a fourth line or you're asked to play third line defense, there is a component on the bench and in the locker room of your job is to kind of just don't screw it up. That is a perception of what the fourth line is. Don't give up a goal. If you score one, great. Just don't give up a goal. And that's kind of the same thing for the third line D. If we score while you're on the ice, great. But don't give up a goal. Well, and I think that's affected him, I think, to some extent.
I don't like that way of thinking, though. Like, you could teach a player to play one way, but changing him is a whole different animal. You're saying that's what he's trying to do, you can't do that.
But if you think he's a liability, you're going to try to change him. And that's the job of a coach, is to try to still get the best out of the player while limiting the deficiencies. Now, with him, it may be impossible to do that.
I think it makes way more sense to play him in a little bit of a limited role, but then continue to let him shine where he shines in, power play situations and in the overtime.
It's just a balance they haven't found yet, that's for sure.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is Shane Gostisbehere for Johnny Gaudreau.
There you go.
Again, I don't want one midget for another, but that's just me.
Oh, and on that note,
let's go into the NHL. Riggs, you say you did want to talk about the NHL a little bit.
Yeah, I just want to touch on the scoring race real quick. Leon Draisaitl has 47 points.
Did you think there would ever be a time this year where Connor McDavid would not lead his team in points?
Right. Let's put it this way. I didn't think that anyone would ever hit 150 points again in the NHL, and I think Draisaitl and McDavid might both do it this year.
It's possible.
That's crazy.
It's legitimately not impossible.
No.
47 points through 23 games or whatever they've played is unreal.
I think it will slow down. I think it's just the way the game is played. I think it has to slow down. And if it doesn't, these guys are having a season,
You would think memorable. That, wouldn't you?
You would think.
Either way, and also, another insane scorer here, David Pastrnak has 20 goals in 22 games.
Insane.
That is unbelievable.
The fact that
23 games now, but it's insane. I'm sorry. Yeah, but it's absurd.
The fact that those things are happening in the same year. Okay, and again, it's not a half a season, so there's still a lot of time for it to level off, and it may. But if it doesn't, that begs the question, what's going on in the NHL? This is not one player in one spot that's an outlier.
Scoring has been up each of the last couple years. And last year, Kucherov had 128, I believe.
Right around there, yeah.
Rantanen was right around 120. There were I think there were 1,300 point scorers last year. Brad Marchand fell 1 point short. There was a couple guys at 99. It's really insane. Scoring is definitely up. A couple years ago, if you remember, they made that slight tweak to the goaltending equipment where the goaltending equipment is a little bit smaller. Several goalies complained about it. I think Mike Smith was one of the more vocal about it.
Yeah, he needs all the help he can get.
Oh, right. Now, see, I thought he would like the lighter equipment so he could go skate around more. But that's just me.
Clearly something's going on.
Yeah, and it's something that the NHL has wanted basically since the 2004-05 lockout.
Yeah,
that's why the two-line pass rule got eliminated. That's why the trapezoid was put in place. That's why after the 2012 lockout, refs got way tighter on hooking and holding and slashing.
You just touched on one of the things I think that's taken a few years for it to help. I'm not saying power plays are way up and power play goals are way up.
But they are over the period of time before that.
But the player's willingness to take that penalty and make that slash and make that, I think it has freed up the offensive players a little bit because there's not as much of the hooking and grappling and all that stuff that's going on. So I think that's helped scoring some, definitely.
And the game's just getting faster. Just each year, it just seems like the game's faster. The guys are just more talented each year.
And a lot of that. And a lot of that has to do with guys who are under 6 foot and under 200 pounds scoring a whole lot of goals. Hello, Mitch Marner.
Well, Toronto's got their own sort of situation. Speaking of which, Babcock.
Yeah, we
continuing around Tuesday the night. NHL. Let's go to Toronto. Yeah,
Tuesday night, or it was Wednesday. The Tuesday night, the Toronto Maple Leafs lost to the Vegas Golden Knights. On Wednesday, Mike Babcock was relieved of his duties, and he was replaced by Sheldon Keefe, who was previously coaching the Toronto Marlies, the Maple Leafs AHL affiliate. They came out Thursday night and sure looked like they had a coach they wanted to play for. Toronto won again last night and are 2-0 in the Sheldon Keefe era.
First off, it's extremely disappointing that Dave Haxtell was not named the coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, I'm offended for Big Dave. He's an established NHL coach, and he got passed over for some AHL bum.
How hilarious would it be if he was like the next Berube? They named him the coach immediately. They go on to win the cup. It'd be so funny.
I'd stop watching hockey.
I'm so glad they didn't name him the coach, because if they named him the coach, I was going to go to the sports book and put $1,000 on them winning the cup, because it's 100% going to happen.
Here's what's going on in Toronto for the first two games. Do you ever give you watch a little kid, you give him some candy, and you watch him run around the room like bouncing off the walls, and then you look an hour later and he's dead asleep? That's exactly
kinda
what's
going to happen. Kind of sounds like Junior all the time.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen in Toronto. As soon as ding dong, the witch is dead and he's not here anymore, and Babcock's gone, and everybody's happy for a few games, you're going to watch that team. You letting the inmates run the asylum is insane. It's crazy. I can't believe they fired him.
I don't think they're letting the inmates run the asylum. There were rumors floating around that the GM, Kyle Dubas, wanted to fire him after the loss to Boston this past season. And he was overruled, essentially. The team, upper management, Brendan Shanahan and Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, the group that owns the Maple Leafs, basically overruled Dubas and didn't allow him to fire Babcock, is apparently the rumor. So this is something Dubas has wanted for a while. And when you've lost, at the time, 6 straight, it's kind of time to turn your season around. They'd far underplayed expectations. Management was apparently, Dubas was apparently upset about how Babcock deployed players. I don't think it's as crazy as you think it is. I think he had to go.
I just think in the long run, they're going to really regret it.
Why is that?
Why are they going to regret it? I disagree, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Because when you have somebody with his pedigree who knows what it takes and he's not getting the players to respond, that's the player's problem.
Does he know what it takes, though?
Absolutely.
He had one of the best teams ever in Detroit.
I was going to say, I'm going to question his pedigree. He has one cup, and I could have coached that team to a Stanley Cup.
I think you're underestimating how hard it is to walk into that situation.
I think you're underestimating how easy it is to coach Pavel Datsyuk, Henrik Zetterberg, Nick Lidstrom. That team has like 7 Hall of Famers on it.
That team, yeah, but they weren't just good for a year.
I know. That's what I'm saying. They were good for a decade before Babcock got there.
I understand that. And they stayed good.
Yeah, because they're a good team.
This just in, you need good players to win in the NHL. Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
He had 10 Hall of Famers. Again.
Look what's going on in New York and the Islanders.
Dave Haxtell could have coached that team to a cup.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I had a similar thought when they first hired Babcock of like, all right, this guy's won before, he can do it. But this Toronto team has way too much talent to be this bad.
Yep. They have way too much talent to lose to Boston in the first round 2 years in a row. And maybe you can blame the NHL postseason schedule, and I agree. I much prefer 1-8. I understand the divisional system. But at the same time, Toronto was a top 5 team the last 2 years. They just happened to play against, the second best team in the league.
Yeah, and their biggest knock was their defense. So then they go out and trade for Jake Muzzin. They go out and trade for Tyson Barrie. both of which have had awful starts. Tyson Barry, I think, had 6 or 7 points through the first 22 games. In his last two games with the new coach, he's got 3 already. So
you know how everybody complained about Dave Haxtell playing Andrew McDonald too much?
Yep.
Tyson Barry, I think, was averaging something like 18 minutes a night. Cody Ceci is averaging about 24 minutes a night.
And Cody Ceci is not a good defenseman. That's
under Babcock, news. I mean. Yep. No, he's down on Andrew McDonald level. I'm willing to say that Cody Ceci is about on the Andrew McDonald level.
I think he's slightly better than that, but not saying much.
Not much. The bar is laying on the ground, and he is struggling to step over yep. it. But at the same time, Cody Ceci is bad at hockey.
Yeah.
Just bad.
Yeah, and then it goes back to, I believe it was the Boston series in the playoffs. You're down by one or up by, I forget what the situation was. You're sitting Austin Matthews and putting out Patrick Marleau.
Exactly.
With a minute or two left in the game. I mean, so play your best players. It's not that hard of a concept.
To Toronto fans, Babcock's deployment of his talent has been terrible. And they've wanted him out for quite a while. I don't think this firing is nearly as reactionary or, you know, quick as you think, senior.
If you have a hard time playing for a coach and you are only scoring 6 points in 20-something games like Barry because there's too much pressure over your head, you can't play for this coach, and you had the weight of the world lifted with the new coach and you got 3 points in 2 games, if you're that small, you have no shot when the chips are down in the playoffs and the pressure is not from the coach, but the pressure is from winning the game. You're not big enough to win in the big moments. I'm sorry.
You made a comment about Jake Voracek's numbers and Shane Gostisbehere's numbers being down because they weren't being played, correct?
Their ice time is down. Not just is their ice time down, but the way they're being told to play the game, they're limiting their risk, so they're going to limit the point totals are going to suffer.
Apply everything you just said to Tyson Barry. Because that's what was happening under Babcock. He wasn't playing, so he wasn't producing. And then he was getting punished for not producing by playing even less. And at a certain point, you kind of end up not playing.
Again, I don't know. If you can't get over the pressure from the coach to still play well, I don't see how in crunch moments and important moments of playoff games you're going to come through. I just don't see it.
Well, and exactly. So now the Sheldon Keefe's goal is to elevate Tyson Barry and get him back to the point where he's comfortable playing, you know, 24, 25, 26 minutes a night and can be a productive member of that roster come playoff time.
Yeah, it's not a motivational issue from Babcock, I don't think, at least.
No, I think it was a deployment issue.
It's a deployment issue. Even though there have been some things said about him treating the young guys poorly and not playing them well and playing the vets. And
he's trying to turn them into the type of players that win Stanley Cups, not players who win.
First of all, Stanley Cup, singular. Babcock does not have multiple.
Okay. The cup.
You can shine up Tyson Barry as much as you want. He's not going to be Nicholas Lidstrom. Nobody is.
Of course.
Morgan Riley's not going to be. So it's hard to say that. I don't know if Babcock's trying to make him a good hockey player or if he's trying to recreate his previous team that won. And at a certain point, you're looking at it and it's a little unrealistic.
Well, here's what we know for sure. Babcock will get another job.
Oh, for sure. Oh,
absolutely.
And we'll see. Well, you know, if he's better in that place than he was in Toronto, and he was better before he got to Toronto, you will find out. Oh, gee, must have been the Toronto players.
Management
not backing the coach to say, we're going to ship players out of here before we ship the coach out of here. Do what the coach says, or you're going to be gone. And they clearly didn't do that.
Yeah, we'll find that out very quickly. We will also see the Sheldon Keefe-led Toronto Maple Leafs next Tuesday, December 3rd in Philadelphia. That being said, you know, let's circle back around to the Flyers. This week, 4 games. Vancouver Monday night, Columbus Wednesday night in Columbus, and you're back home for the Black Friday game against Detroit at 4 p.m. I'll be in attendance for that game. And Saturday, you travel to Montreal to play a 3 o'clock matinee against the Montreal Canadiens. it's a reasonable week. Vancouver started really, really hot. They've cooled down pretty drastically. Columbus is kind of what we expected them to be. Same with Detroit. And then Montreal's a pretty good team. So the Flyers have a chance to pick up some serious points this week.
Yeah, so they should go 0-2-1. Or 1-2-1. Boy, my math was bad there for a second.
Yeah, just there.
Yep. So they should go 1-2-1. Continuing the roller coaster.
Okay. But if they go 2-1-1, you're pretty happy with that, right?
2-1-1 is acceptable.
I think that's reasonable. You stay above 500, you stay afloat, and
how about they win the overtime game and go 3-1?
Well, we'll see. Listen, the way they've been playing, they might play all four games in overtime, let's be honest.
Yeah, because
they may go 3-1, all four games in overtime.
Yeah.
Hey, they might go 0-0-4.
That's possible.
It's possible. I mean, with Vancouver still, they're a good team. They have talent.
They just beat Washington.
They've fallen off a little tiny bit in the last couple of weeks or so, but they started so hot. They're still a very good team. Elias Pettersson's a very good player.
And then say what you want about Columbus. It seems like every year we struggle with them. I don't know why. So that's not even a given.
No, for sure. And then the same, Detroit, they're a bad team, but that doesn't mean they're bad every game.
Detroit, you need to win. You need to win that game.
You got to get 2 points out of that one.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee with Detroit. They just lost to Calgary.
Yeah, but Calgary's a good team that's playing poorly. Detroit's just trying to lose.
Also, for the record, Elias Pettersson is 6'2", but he's only a 176. So you want to talk about skinny players. There you go.
Okay, you can have one or two.
Okay.
Can't have six.
Out of the four.
They don't have any. I don't think they do have any.
Out of the four teams the Flyers play this week, name one skilled forward who's big. Vancouver, Columbus, Detroit, Montreal.
Anthony Mantha.
Yeah.
He's hurt.
Is he hurt?
Yeah, I think he's hurt.
Is he?
Okay.
Okay, so they have none. Cool.
Okay, because Anthony Mantha was the first one that came to mind, because he's a big dude and has all the talent in the world.
Yeah, when he's not, cross-checking Claude Giroux in the back of the head.
There you go. I'm trying to think of Montreal. Not really. Kotkaniemi's tiny.
Either way, we got a big week. We got a big week upcoming, so I think we should start to wrap up the show. I hear Mike's kid screaming in the background.
Well, I just want
to
jump in for 1 second. You asked in those four games, where's the large men that can skate really fast on those four teams? And we weren't able to come up with any off the top of our heads. Let's not pretend any of those four teams are anything to write home about. That's not an accident.
I believe Montreal is second in their division behind only Boston.
Third.
Are they third?
Behind Florida, yeah.
Okay.
And they also have Carey Price. So,
Yeah, they sure do.
And they have that big body on defense, Shea Weber.
Sure.
Helps.
That's fair.
It helps.
They have some good players for sure. But, if we're talking about that premium, large center with good hands and can score and play along the wall and play old school hockey. Yeah.
Not old school. Not old school. New school. Big and fast. Not just big. Big and fast.
Okay. Well, either way, we'll see how it goes. In the meantime, you can let us know what you think about this discussion on Twitter at YWT Podcast. Producer Mike is at Mike_Giletto, and Mike Senior is at Mike from S Jersey. You can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcasts, SportsTalkPhilly.com, Spotify. Heck, we might be on MySpace, and I don't even know. But on that note,
Okay.
On that note. Yeah, maybe we'll have to make a MySpace page.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Got more work for me, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Have fun editing this one, by the way.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
And on that note, any last words, Senior?
No, I'm good to go. We'll see how this week goes.
Junior?
No, I think that was it.
All right.
We covered it all.
On that note, that'll do it. And until next week, go Flyers.